Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, February 27th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Two Teenagers Shot in West Midland. Midland Police Department Investigating Saturday Night Incident. By Scott Nunn, staff writer. Two teenagers were hospitalized following a shooting incident on the west side of Midland Saturday. An 18-year-old male who had been shot multiple times arrived at Midland Memorial Hospital around 10:49 p.m., according to a press release from the city of Midland. The victim told officers he was reportedly shot at a location across Loop 250 from the Scarborough Sports Complex. A short time later, a 15-year-old male arrived at MMH with a gunshot wound to his foot. Both victims provided Midland police officers with details and the location of the crime scene, which the officers located. The incident is being described as aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, the release reads. At this time, this is an ongoing investigation, and no arrests have been made. Based on the location listed in the press release, the shooting occurred near Astound Stadium, which is the location of a carnival that was being held in the stadium's parking lot. This article is entitled, City to Approve Agreement for Interflight to Continue Success in Business Attractions, by Ben Schaffer, staff writer. The Midland City Council will decide on a consultant services agreement between Midland Development Corporation and Interflight Global Corporation to continue to bring aerospace and defense companies to Midland. An agreement of $175,425 was approved by the MDC on February 12th. In 2018, Interflight, according to Chairman and CEO Oscar Garcia, was conducting a site selection process for AST Space Mobile. Garcia said February 12th that the Midland Development Corporation made them an offer that was most optimal to bring the company's headquarters to occupy the then-vacant Midland Spaceport Business Park. After that, Garcia said they were then hired to develop a strategic plan to fill out the spaceport in Midland. Since 2018, Garcia said Interflight has brought one or two space companies to Midland per year. AST Space Mobile in 2018, Nano Avionics in 2019, Kepler Aerospace in 2020, Firehawk Aerospace in 2021, New Frontier Aerospace in 2022, Astroport Space Technologies, and Space Nation in 2023. In 2024, Garcia shared that new companies planned to come to Midland in 2024 are MITRE, Starfighter Space, and the Space Force Association. According to Garcia, his corporation has attracted 8 new companies and over 250 aerospace and defense jobs and related hardware, facilities, and equipment to Midland. The City Council will decide on approving another agreement between the MDC and Interflight to continue to attract tenants in the sector. This article is entitled, Lil Jon Slated to Headline Basin Brunch at the Tailgate, by B.K. Richter, staff writer. Atlanta rapper and producer Lil Jon is slated to perform a DJ set for the first Basin Brunch of the calendar year in Midland. The performance will be coming to the Tailgate, according to the business's Facebook announcement. While ticket and VIP table information has yet to be released, the performance is scheduled for Saturday, March 23rd. Jonathan H. Smith is better known by his stage name Lil Jon and is considered to be a staple of the Dirty South era of hip-hop. Recently, the rapper joined other performers such as Usher and Ludacris on stage during the 2024 Super Bowl halftime show. Lil Jon has been credited with making Southern crunk music an international sensation. This article is entitled MPD Warns Residents About Phone Scam by Ben Schaffer, staff writer. The Midland Police Department wants to advise residents of a possible phone scam, according to the City of Midland. The press release states that the Midland Police Department has been receiving calls from the public about a phone scam from the number 432-355-7299. The subject is calling random people claiming he is Sergeant James William or Sergeant Miller with the Midland Police Department and advising people that they have warrants for failure to appear or contempt of court. The subject is telling the public they can pay their fines by giving him their financial information, the press release states. The Midland Police Department does not call the public and ask that they pay their warrants or fines over the phone, the City of Midland stated. This article is entitled Odessa Student Shot in Parking Lot of High School by Scott Nunn and V.K. Richter, staff writer. One Ector County ISD student has been charged following a shooting in the parking lot of Odessa High School Monday, which sent one female student to hospital. The incident sent Odessa High School into lockdown. According to school officials, the student was shot in the foot in the parking lot of the school. The student was transported to hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. An Ector County ISD press release said the secure mode was lifted at the start of the first lunch period at 11:30 a.m. Late Monday, ECISD Superintendent Dr. Scott Murray held a press conference regarding the shooting incident. He confirmed that five students, all from ECISD schools, had been involved in the shooting. Later, the district stated all five students were questioned and police proceeded to charge one student and release the other four, who were considered victims or witnesses in the incident. Murray also confirmed that the source of the disagreement which led to the shooting was off campus. The Ector County ISD police are taking the lead on this case, he said during the press conference. Of the five students involved, Murray said only one firearm was collected. He also confirmed that not all of the students were students attending Odessa High School. OHS will continue to have counselors available for children, staff, and families if they need someone to talk to about this incident, Murray said. The student charged in the incident is a 15-year-old male and will be charged with two counts of aggravated assault, a Class 2 felony. The student will also be charged with unlawful carry of a weapon and possession of a controlled substance. In October of 2023, ECISD schools were placed in secure status after the FBI received threats. In late August of 2023, 911 emergency operators received an anonymous phone call consisting of a bomb threat at Permian High School. Additionally, in May of 2023, Ector County ISD reported taking extra precautions at Odessa High School after district officials said the school received a school shooting threat. This article is entitled, Siva Kumar Wins Second Title. Seventh Grader Becomes Regional Spelling Bee Champion by B.K. Richter, staff writer. For 7th grader Shriya Sivakumar of Young Women's Leadership Academy, a second title as the champion of the Midland Reporter-Telegram Regional Spelling Bee finally came. On Saturday, at the Wagner and Brown Auditorium inside the Allison Fine Arts Building at Midland College, Sivakumar took the championship title with 34 of the best spellers from Midland, Greenwood, Andrews, Big Spring, and Monahans. It was a moment that Siva Kumar had been waiting for since winning her first title as regional spelling bee champion in 2022 for the Carver Center. Last year, in 2023, Siva Kumar dueled it out for 36 rounds with Shweta Jayakumar of the Young Women's Leadership Academy. Jayakumar walked away as the 2023 champion, with Siva Kumar taking the runner-up position. Siva Kumar's trademark is her visualization of the words as she spells the letters one by one. She asks every time during her turn for more information on the word before she begins to type the letters on an imaginary keyboard that only she can see. Her winning word was serrated, notched or toothed on the edge. The example that the pronouncer used was, "Cody always uses a knife with a serrated blade to slice the bread." Siva Kumar said that while she studies words and their patterns, she also asks her father to help quiz her. She readily admits that she has been competing in spelling bees since third grade, and for her, it is a family tradition that has motivated her to keep competing. "My brother and my family are really into it, spelling bees," she said during an interview following the competition. "It is like a family dream, and I want to accomplish that." Siva Kumar is grateful for the opportunity to travel to Washington, D.C. in May while attending the Scripps National Spelling Bee. "I know a lot of great spellers that never get the chance to go to Washington, D.C., so I am grateful for the opportunity," she said. Siva Kumar's father, Subramani, said this is the third year that a member of his family will be returning to Washington, D.C. "My son finished ninth in the nation in 2022, he said during an interview. "We will prepare hard for the next 3 months." The runner-up of this year's regional competition, sponsored by Diamondback Energy, was Big Spring Intermediate's Tristan Trinidad. In 2022, Trinidad tied for fourth place, and in 2023, he tied for third with Bowie Fine Arts Academy's Easton Pitt, who was also a returner in this year's B. This year, newcomer Vincent De Leon from General Tommy Franks Elementary placed third in the regional spelling bee. This article is entitled "Tall City Brewing and Susie's South 40 Create Texas-Inspired Beer" by Robin Bradshaw, staff writer. To celebrate Texas Independence Day, the West Texas brewing company Tall City Brewing recently announced a local collaboration with Susie's South 40. "There's no denying Texans love all things Texas, especially when food and drinks are involved. So, in celebration of Texas Independence Day on March 2nd, two Midland-based companies are marrying brands for a special seasonal limited edition brew called the Pecan Toffee Bock, a beer that screams Texas," a portion of the press release said. The beer, which is described to hit taste buds with a full palate of pecans and toffee notes, will be sold on tap as a small batch release during the Texas Independence Day celebration at the Tall City Brewery in Midland on Saturday. Texas Independence Day commemorates the adoption of the state's independence declaration from Mexico in 1836. In addition, March 2nd in Texas also marks Texas Flag Day and Sam Houston Day, although significant observances are not an official legal holiday in the state, such as Texas Independence Day. "It was a no-brainer to create something that screams Texas," Tall City Brewery stated in the release. "We are beyond ecstatic to work with Susie and her team to help celebrate a very historical day in Texas." Tall City Brewing is open from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Saturdays, according to company's Facebook page, and is located at 3303 West Golf Course Road in Midland. This is the Life Tributes column. Nancy Lee Davidson Jordan, January 29, 1935, to February 21, 2024. Nancy Jordan passed quietly Wednesday, the 21st of February, after an extended struggle with dementia. She was preceded in death by her husband, Jack G. Jordan, also of Midland, her son, Craig A. Jordan of Dallas, and her sister, Nina L. Thompson of Fort Collins, Colorado. She is survived by her son, Michael D. Jordan, and his wife, Grace S. Jordan, and their children, Catherine Jordan and her husband, Joshua B. Jordan, Madeline Jordan, and Craig Jordan's son, Sean Jordan. Services will be held graveside at Rest Haven Cemetery at 11 a.m. March 2nd. Dr. Steve Shore of First Presbyterian Midland, officiant. All are welcome. In lieu of flowers, the family would welcome donations to your local hospice or dementia support agency. Melba Lee Hart, August 18, 1929 to February 20, 2024. Melba Lee Hart was born in Midland on August 18, 1929. She married Jesse R. Hart in Midland on January 1, 1948, and followed him to several oil field jobs across West Texas. Melba was preceded in death by her parents, Frank and Iola Story, one son, Fred Duane Hart, at birth in 1949, her brothers Sid and Mike Story, her sister Marvell Gray, and a great-granddaughter, Haley Kemp. She lost her husband of 67 years, Jesse Hart, in 2015. She is survived by her two children, Verna Hart Ness and husband Carl of Maybank, Texas, her son, G. Bruce Hart, and wife Ginger of Midland, four granddaughters, and seven great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, Melba would appreciate a donation to one of her two favorite charities, St. Jude Children's Research Hospital or Shiloh Terrace Baptist Church in Mesquite, Texas. Services are under the arrangement of Autry's Carol Lair Funeral Home of Athens, Texas. Ricky Siegler, February 25, 1955 to February 22, 2024. Abilene. Ricky Don Siegler, 68, of Abilene, passed away on January 22, 2024, in Abilene. Ricky was born in Paducah, Texas, to Rita June Townley and Bobby Frank Siegler on February 25, 1955. He was raised in Paducah and graduated in 1973. Ricky was preceded in death by his parents. He is survived by two sons, Reese Siegler of Plano, Hunter Siegler, Mary Elise, and three grandchildren, Caden, Chloe, and Kaylee Siegler of Midland, his sister Pam Nolan Reynolds of Abilene, and many other relatives and friends. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Friday, March 1st at First Baptist Church of Paducah. A service will be held at 10 a.m. on March 2nd at the Paducah First Baptist Church. Graveside services will follow at Garden of Memories Cemetery. Services are under the direction of West Central Texas Cremation, Abilene. The family suggests memorials to these located in Paducah, Texas: John Colby Jones Memorial Park, Loaves and Fish Meal Ministry, Garden of Memories Cemetery Fund, and/or Paducah Volunteer Fire Department. Frances Wynell Nell Seitz, November 24, 1927 to February 18, 2024. Frances Wynell Nell Seitz, 96, of Midland, passed away Sunday, February 18th. Nell was born in 1927 in Big Lake, Texas, to Ralph Lamar and Jenny Matt Brown. The family relocated to McCamey, and it was there she met her husband, David Thomas Tom Seitz. They were married in 1949 and had three children. The family relocated to Midland. Nell was preceded in death by her husband Tom and her son David Thomas Seitz Jr. and his wife Sherry Seitz, her parents Ralph and Jenny Matt Brown, her brother Ralph Brown, and her sister Jane Fisher. She is survived by her son Ralph Seitz and wife Janet Seitz of Midland, her daughter Mary Seitz Lurch and husband Chris Lurch of Mountain Home, Texas, 8 grandchildren, numerous great-grandchildren and nieces, and a nephew and a great-great-grandson. A memorial service is scheduled for 10:30 a.m. Thursday, February 29th, in the chapel of First Baptist Church in Midland.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, February 27th. OHS girl's foot grazed by bullet in school's parking lot. An Odessa high school student was grazed in the foot by a bullet Monday morning in the west parking lot next to Joel Coleman Field. The school was placed on lockdown and the girl was taken to Medical Center Hospital's emergency room. The hospital spokesman said Monday afternoon she was grazed by the bullet. Ector County Independent School District Director of Communications Mike Atkins said it was 9:45 a.m. when they were notified of 911 calls of a possible shooting in one of the parking lots at Odessa High. Our officers responded. Multiple law agencies responded. I want to pause and thank our law enforcement agencies. They have always responded well with our ECISD police, and that made a big difference today. We have law enforcement and first responders that were on the scene very quickly. Atkins said that the officers were able to find some witnesses right away who were very cooperative and let them know that some of the folks who were involved with the shooting had fled the scene. The suspect is now in custody, and Atkins said there was only one victim who was taken to the hospital for non-life-threatening injuries. There was a student that was shot in the foot in the parking lot, Atkins said. That's all I can say, all I can release at this point. That student was transported with non-life-threatening injuries. That's all I'm allowed to say about the victim of the shooting. The others, I'm told there is a suspect in custody. Again, that's all I'm able to say right now. Other details about the victim or the gunman were not released, including if the shooter was a student at OHS, or if the students were in a fight, or what kind of gun was used. Atkins said that the officers believe the incident was isolated to the people that were involved. It wasn't a larger thing aimed at the campus, Atkins said. But there were kids involved, and those were the people that fled the scene when 911 was called and when officers arrived at the scene. Odessa High was placed in a lockdown immediately after the call, but was soon moved to what is called a secure and hold. We were able to put the school in a lockdown immediately after that call, but were able to, after talking to some witnesses, move that to what we call a secure, which is not the same level as response as a lockdown could be, Atkins said. But we did keep everyone in a hold, wherever they were, when the first call came in. Police responded and were able to get some good witness statements and an investigation. It took that period of time to check the entire campus, which our ECISD officers did. They secured the campus and feel it is safe. Students were released at 11:30 a.m. when the hold ended, where numerous parents were waiting to pick up their children outside of the high school. They began releasing students at the first lunch, which is at 11:30, so students will be allowed to leave campus as they normally would, Atkins said. SAS counselors were also present at the school. Any kid that need someone to talk to, we do have SAS counselors on campus, and the school leaders will also be available, Atkins said. Of course, we will be here all day, as we do. Imagine some kids will not be able to be picked up or will be on campus all day long, and the school's opened, and we will be here for those students. Atkins said he believes the lockdown process worked as it was set up to. Yes, I do believe it did, Atkins said. Let me add one caveat to that I haven't already specifically talked to our police officers about the lockdown in a situation like this. Both students and staff have already practiced it and know what the response is expected to be, and they've practiced it. I haven't been told it didn't work today, but yes, I do believe it worked, although that's something I need to ask police officers that specific question. Prior to students being released, worried parents were in the parking lot waiting to pick up their children. Juan Guadalupe was waiting to pick up his son. Supposedly, from what we understand, there was an altercation between two boys and one of them pulled a firearm and a girl got in the way and was shot in the foot, Guadalupe said. My wife called me and told me that there was a shooting at the school and that our son had sent her a screenshot of a Snapchat saying that someone had gotten shot. Odessa High students talk more about the lockdown after being released. I was terrified, OHS freshman Destiny Little said. I was calling my family. Others, not so much. It wasn't terrifying for me because I knew they, the cops, would solve it, OHS senior Lance Little said. Lance Little said everyone in his classroom was calm during the lockdown. They were all minding their own business and scrolling on TikTok, Lance said. OPD report details Kelm not the aggressor. Odessa police reports detail an eyewitness account showing GOP Precinct 203 chair candidate Carmen Wilhite's statements to police that she was the victim in a confrontation between her and GOP county chair candidate Donna Kelm are not true. Various social media reports and a press release from the Ector County GOP painted Kelm as the responsible party, but according to the official report by OPD officer Bobby Pietro Pollo, witness Linda Hall said Kelm did gently touch Carmen on the arm before Carmen pulled away. Linda states that Donna did not appear to be threatening or aggressive toward Carmen. The report states Kelm told officers she gently touched Carmen's arm in a non-aggressive way so she can simply request Carmen to not accuse her of being a Democrat. She stated when Carmen flung her arm back, she had grabbed Donna by the back of her hair and yanked on it, causing her pain and believing she may have pulled some hair out of her head. Hall, who is running for Precinct 1, said it was Wilhite who attacked Kelm, not the other way around. I'm going to tell you I have worked over there 2 days with Carmen, and for 2 days she had tried to antagonize me. She has told everybody that I'm a Democrat, Hall, 69, said Thursday night. She does anything she can to belittle and try to stir up trouble. And I told her yesterday and today to stop talking about me, to stop interrupting me, and to leave me alone, and she says I'm the aggressor. Again and again, Wilhite interrupted her while she was speaking with voters, Hall said. She would just walk up and start saying, she's not telling you the truth. We are the Republicans, they're Democrats, Hall said. I felt so intimidated I went and stayed by my pickup for safety reasons. Wilhite didn't respond to questions about the altercation and also didn't respond weeks ago about anti-gay comments she made. Kelm said Thursday night she was resting per doctor's orders and was shocked at how Wilhite claimed she attacked her at the Ector County Annex. I just touched her shoulder, Kelm said. I didn't grab her. I just touched her shoulder and was trying to say, come on, stop saying I'm a Democrat. And she yanked my hair out. Kelm was treated by a doctor and was told to rest. According to the OPD report, Wilhite wanted to file charges, and she was given a case number and advised to contact municipal court. Kelm also reported the assault following her doctor's appointment. OPD continues to investigate. Kelm is running against GOP County Chair Tisha Crow and Wilhite against Odessa businessman Ronnie Lewis. Lewis, through his Ector County Politics Facebook page, reminded people Thursday night that he warned them Wednesday night that Wilhite was being aggressive and dishonest. Tisha Crow and Jeff Russell held a 2-day seminar for her appointed precinct chair on disrupting opponents and subversion, Lewis wrote. They're using their training. He wrote he was proud of Kelm for stepping up and running against Crow and asked for prayers for her. Council will discuss selling old fire station. The Odessa City Council is set to sell the old fire station number 6 on Brentwood Drive Tuesday night. The city has received 3 proposals. Peace Academy of West Texas, a nonprofit, wants to build a community center where they will host educational programs, cultural events, recreational activities, and community meetings. Their proposal calls for the city to sell the station for $50,000. During a recent council meeting, Austin and Lauren James said they'd like to purchase the station to rent out office space to small businesses while utilizing the rest of the building for their businesses. He owns and operates Giant Rentals and Services, and she owns Lauren James Clothing Company, which specializes in clothing and gifts and bear stuffing for nonprofits and schools. They also plan to host larger events for local entrepreneurs, the couple said in a letter to the council. They propose the city sell the station for $365,000. Megan Prado told the council her family, which opened Town and Country Drug in 1958, would like to own a building of their own to operate their business out of. She said she dreams of opening a drive-through pharmacy. Her proposal includes a sales price of $400,000. Tuesday regular agenda also includes a discussion about spending $751,000 to equip 20 recently purchased Odessa Police Department Ford Expeditions with the appropriate lights, plastic seats, partitions, radar, and other items. In addition, the council is scheduled to discuss a possible $6.5 million agreement between the Odessa Development Corporation and the Waukaman Trading Company that would result in the development of a light industrial park near Yukon and Fadre Roads. During the council's work session, the council will discuss completing Floyd Gwynn Park. The project, which was designed by KDC Associates, was expected to cost more than $8.5 million, with Onyx General Contractor doing most of the work. In February 2023, when Parks and Recreation Director Steve Patton told the council that after a few delays for materials, the park was 98% complete and would come in under budget by $68,000 to $72,000. However, back in November, his replacement, Max Reyes, told council members that the project still wasn't complete. Reyes said he discovered major irrigation issues, a holy pavilion roof, improperly crimped trim, and faulty weather stripping. In addition, Reyes also discovered that instead of removing an asphalt parking lot, a contractor simply dumped dirt over it, claiming that's what a prior administrator instructed them to do. The lights to the park are currently locked down because a subcontractor is waiting to be paid by Onyx, Reyes said. At the meeting in February, City Manager John Beckmeyer called the entire Floyd Gwynn situation a boondoggle from the get-go. During the same meeting, Mayor Javier Hoven said the situation was the result of the old culture. Mismanagement has been seen again and again with Sherwood Park, the park at UTVB, McKinney Park, and now Floyd Gwynn, he claimed. The council will also discuss adding new credit card readers in billing and collections, building inspections, Central Fire Administration Building, Police Department, Parks Department, and Ratliff Links Golf Course. Laura W. Bush Institute for Women's Health to host luncheon on heart health. The Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, Laura W. Bush Institute for Women's Health, will present There Is So Much You May Not Know About a Woman's Heart, Wednesday at the Petroleum Club in Midland, 501 West Wall Street. The event, scheduled from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m., is a part of the Feed Your Mind Luncheon Series, sponsored by the Anwar Family and Midland Energy. Guest speaker will be Haley Houston, MD, a board-certified cardiologist in Lubbock. Houston will discuss how heart disease specifically impacts women through different phases of life, such as during pregnancy. Prem Nagella, the Laura W. Bush Institute for Women's Health Assistant Director, also will share her personal story about discovering her life-threatening cardiovascular disease at the age of 45. Tickets are $25 per person. Tables are available for $500. Visit tinyurl.com/m2xavhzb to register and for more information. VA Heart of Texas Healthcare Network sets virtual town hall. The VA Heart of Texas Healthcare Network will hold a virtual tele-town hall from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. February 29th. The virtual veteran town hall is an opportunity for Texas veterans, their caregivers, and families to communicate directly with VA Heart of Texas Healthcare Network senior leaders. To attend the virtual tele-town hall, dial in at 833-980-3641 or visit access.live/TXVA Town Hall. Led by Dr. Wendell Jones, VA Heart of Texas Healthcare Network, Veterans Integrated Service Network Vision 17 encompasses most of the state of Texas, approximately 240,000 square miles, and has administrative offices in Arlington. Vision 17 oversees 7 healthcare systems: VA North Texas, Central Texas VA, West Texas VA, Amarillo VA, El Paso VA, South Texas Veterans, and VA Texas Valley Coastal Bend. Of the 1.6 million veterans in the Vision 17 area, more than 636,000 are enrolled for care. This large geographic area ranges from urban centers such as Dallas-Fort Worth, San Antonio, and Austin to largely rural areas such as Bonham and Kerrville, to the rapidly expanding lower Rio Grande Valley. Several military installations in El Paso, Central and South Texas afford the network many opportunities to collaborate with the Department of Defense. Topics to be discussed include Health Connect, Clinical, Contact Center, and Tele-EC, the Veteran Experience, Vision Priorities and VA Health Care Priorities to Action, Medical Identity Theft Awareness. For more information about these or other VA employment opportunities, contact Public Affairs at michael.cole6@va.gov. ECISD Children's Center earns 4-star state rating. Ector County ISD announced Monday the ECISD Children's Center at Zavala Elementary has earned the 4-star Texas Rising Star certification from the Texas Workforce Commission. The Texas Rising Star program certifies licensed child care centers throughout the state on a scale of 2 to 4 stars, the 4-star rating being the highest designation. Texas Rising Star programs meet a level of quality that exceeds child care regulation standards. I am extremely proud of the effort of the staff at the ECISD Child Care Center. Assistant Superintendent for Student and School Support, Alicia Siverson, said in a news release. The team went the extra mile to meet the criteria and demonstrate to the appraisers they are serving families at a 4-star level. We are one of only 3 Texas Rising Star 4-star child care centers in this area. We are making an impact. ECISD's Children's Center currently serves 95 children ages 0 to 5, whose parents are either employees of the school district or are students at the Teen Parent Services Program. There are 23 staff members at the center. Research has shown that children who attend higher quality, early learning programs are more prepared for starting school than children who do not. District leaders want to thank the dedicated child care staff for their devotion to providing the highest quality early childhood education at the ECISD Children's Center, the release said. Commissioners meet Tuesday. Ector County Commissioners will decide on a number of items during a 10 a.m. Tuesday meeting at the Ector County Annex, including new cars for the Sheriff's Office and a 2026 Judges and Commissioners Conference in Odessa. They will consider a presentation regarding the Ector County Library Advisory Committee report. The 97th Annual West Texas County Judges and Commissioners Association, CJCA, conference in Odessa in 2026. Approve the travel of three airport board members to attend the Texas Aviation Conference in Galveston. Automated External Defibrillators, AED, implementation for county buildings. Approve the 2023 annual list of gifts and memorial to the Ector County Library in the amount of $326,571.70. Approve the donation of a Labrador Retriever to the Detention Center as a narcotics dog. Transfer of Unit Number 799, Jail Van, from the Sheriff's Office to the Elections Office. Approve the purchase of two LT Chevy Silverado Trail Boss trucks for the Sheriff's Office. The total price will be $139,618.20, and the funds will come from the Seizure Funds account. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve the purchase of three Dodge Chargers for the Sheriff's Office. The total price will be $146,420.34, and the funds will come from the Motor Vehicle Equipment account. Discuss bid specifications for the White Pool House parking lot. The specifications were developed by Public Works, the Purchasing Department, and Landgraf, Crutcher, and Associates, and the bids are ready to be advertised and distributed upon approval by the Commissioner's Court. Consider approval of an oil and gas lease agreement with David H. Arrington Oil Company. Request for proposal. Specifications for oil and gas leases for various Ector County-owned properties. Consider an MHRC development application in Precinct Number 1 to serve 14238 West Raymond Street. Commissioners will also meet in executive session on legal matters and issues related to current and future oil and gas lease agreements. Faces of UTPB, Dr. Joe Sanders. Dr. Joe Sanders has worked at UTPB for almost 20 years, and that's if you don't count the two work-study jobs he held as a student. He began his first work-study position at UTPB as a weekend dispatcher for campus police on the graveyard shift. Despite his background in policing and a three-year stint in financial aid, Sanders has spent a majority of his time at UTPB working in the registrar's office. He has been the registrar since 2013, but don't be fooled, his favorite position he held was assistant registrar. Yeah, we know he's currently in charge of the office. Having started school here in 1998 and returned in 2005 to work full-time, Sanders has watched the university change over nearly two decades. The changes he's seen are drastic. Imagine getting excited over a secret, empty computer lab in the back of the Mesa, giving you access to PCs that back then were hard to come by, or feeling thrilled by messaging your friends through a terminal on the registrar's office PC, which took memorized commands and inputted codes only known to those who worked there. When Sanders lived in student housing in the 90s, which was actually single-wide trailers on campus, he describes the walls as so thin that slamming your neighbor's cabinet would open your own, dispelling all of the contents within. Despite the hardship, the biggest and best change Sanders says he's seen is in the students. At 22 years old, Sanders was the youngest in his class, filled with mostly working adults. He now sees a growing population of younger students. Upon his arrival in 2005, their dream was to grow the university to 4,000 students. Now, he says, if he were to have to tell the president they had 4,000 students registered for fall, he would be sick. They register 4,000 students in early registration alone. Amongst the many important tasks Sanders completes, he's most known for reading the names at commencement. The previous reader left when Sanders became registrar, and the title fell to him. It's a stressful endeavor, yet Sanders does it well, practicing, but not too much. Whether he knows it or not, his voice is forever ingrained in the UTPB students, who work hard to feel a sense of relief and pride when he calls their name. Sanders is a first-generation college student. After dropping out of McMurray University, he had his eye set on Texas Tech, but a two-hour drive later, a failed attempt to find the admissions office shattered his dreams. When I got home, I told my parents, "I guess I can't finish college because I can't even find the admissions office," said Sanders. Sanders' father suggested UTPB, thanks to the welcoming nature of the dean of the School of Business at the time, who helped him find the admissions office. Sanders is here with us today. That helpful spirit is why he loves it here. Women facing robbery charge. Two women have been arrested on warrants issued after a 38-year-old accused them of robbing him. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a man told officers on July 1st he invited two unknown women and a teenaged boy to hang out with him inside his 8th Street apartment. He said once they were inside, the boy pointed a 9mm gun at his head, took his phone, and used Cash App to transfer $800 out of his account to a woman named Mariah. One of the women, Journey Eternity Dunn, denied knowing the alleged victim, the report stated. She also denied having a firearm, but also being shown a picture of her carrying a weapon that had been taken by the alleged victim, she said it was only an airsoft gun, the report stated. Dunn also told police she'd thrown the gun out into the apartment complex. When police spoke with Mariah Mendez, she said the alleged victim had offered her and Dunn $800 to hang out with him, and he willingly paid them using the app, the report stated. Officers were unable to find the boy, but they did find a stolen 9mm handgun in a vent inside Dunn's apartment, the report stated. Dunn was arrested on suspicion of theft of a firearm that day. According to the OPD report, jail personnel recorded Dunn confessing to the robbery to her boyfriend July 4th while speaking with him from the jail. Mendez was booked into the Ector County Jail on February 6th on suspicion of aggravated robbery and engaging in organized criminal activity, first-degree felonies. She was released February 21st after posting $100,000 in surety bonds. Dunn was booked on the same charges Friday. She remained in custody on Monday on surety bonds totaling $100,000. Woman facing theft, burglary charges. An Odessa woman was arrested Friday on burglary and theft warrants issued after two separate incidents last year. According to an Odessa Police Department report, Halifax Avenue residents called 911 on September 6 to report a disturbance. The resident said that Sandra Acosta Medina, 47, and others had moved out of the Halifax Avenue residence about 8 to 9 months earlier, but didn't take a number of belongings with them. They told officers they put all of the group's belongings in the garage so they could collect them on September 6th, and they locked their doors, the report stated. According to the report, the resident said that when Medina and the others arrived to pick up their belongings, they broke windows to get inside and then assaulted them. Medina was arrested on suspicion of burglary of a habitation and theft. She was released from the Ector County Jail Saturday after posting surety bonds totaling $25,500. According to OPD records, the theft case stemmed from a December 27th incident at the University Boulevard HEB. According to an OPD report, Medina was positively identified as a woman seen on video surveillance walking out of HEB without paying for merchandise she concealed in her purse. Medical call leads to drug arrest. According to Odessa police, a local woman was arrested on felony drug charges Sunday, a month after she lost consciousness at work, and medical staff found drugs in her bra. OPD records indicate employees of a DK convenience store on Andrews Highway called 911 on January 21st because Calandra Rochelle Stevens, 43, had passed out. When officers arrived, Odessa Fire Rescue medics informed them that Stevens admitted she'd taken 2 pills of ecstasy before being taken to a local hospital, the report stated. While at the hospital, Stevens became unresponsive, prompting staff to cut through her clothing to provide medical care, the report stated. Once the clothes were cut, medical staff asked an officer to look at Stevens, and the officer found baggies near Stevens' breasts containing more than 10 grams of crack cocaine and 6 grams of ecstasy pills, the report stated. A warrant was issued and Stevens was booked into the Ector County Jail Sunday on suspicion of 2 counts of possession of a controlled substance, a second-degree felony. She was released after posting $50,000 in surety bonds.
This is the Dear Abby column. Man's chronic unemployment creates doubt for future. Dear Abby, I'm a 32-year-old woman who has been with my boyfriend, my first and only partner, for 11 years. Overall, our relationship is healthy. He's smart, kind, supportive, caring, loyal, and funny. I can see us getting married and living a happy life together. The problem is, aside from a few short-term gigs, he hasn't had a job for the last 6 years, when he left his office job to move with me for my career. I've done well, but although he has applied for all sorts of jobs, sales, admin, medical, police, government, fast food, no one has hired him. Last year, he developed a heart condition, and he can no longer perform physical labor. He also suffers from depression. So, I've been paying for nearly everything. I'm lucky not to have credit card debt, but at age 32, I have no retirement savings. My job barely covers living expenses for us and our pets. I want to progress in life and have an equal partner. We've discussed marriage, and I think he's the one. But how long should I hold out hope of him finding a job? Do I just keep on hoping, or do I consider ending things and breaking both our hearts? Signed, Burdened in Florida. Dear Burdened, has it occurred to you that the reason the man you love has been unable to find employment all this time may be connected to his depression? It would benefit you both if he consulted a doctor and sought treatment for it. Free and low-cost counseling is available through the county, as well as through colleges and universities with departments of psychology. Please explore this before ending your relationship, because it could be the solution to your problem. Dear Abby, My sister has become very interested in Zen meditation. I'm afraid she has become obsessed with it. She spent a week at a special meditation workshop during which she said she meditated all day, every day, to the point that her back hurt from sitting so much. She's now saying she wants to become a Zen priest, which necessitates spending 3 months at a Zen center meditating constantly. My sister has a husband and 2 teenage daughters I think she's neglecting. She earned a master's degree in economics at a prestigious university, but works only part-time as a bookkeeper to allow more time for her Zen center. How can I politely persuade her to focus on her family and career and let Zen meditation be her hobby rather than the focus of her life? Signed, Priorities in the West. Dear Priorities, your sister is an adult, intelligent and capable of making her own decisions about the path in life she chooses. Nowhere did you state that her husband and children disagree with it. I do not think your input on this subject, regardless of how politely you offer it, will be welcomed. Keep your opinion to yourself unless asked for it. You can contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.